TD Ameritrade and Western International Securities do not assist in the preparation of this broadcast, and its accuracy and completeness are not guaranteed. The opinions expressed in this report are those of Jerry Sluiswitz, are not necessarily those of TD Ameritrade or Western International Securities or its affiliates or those of this radio station. Any investment discussed may not be suitable for all investors. Investors must make their own decisions based on their own specific investment objective and financial circumstances.
Your financial future is important. You need to make the right choices with your money today. Your Money Talks with financial planner Jerry Sluiswitz will put you on the path to prosperity. Whether it's stocks, bonds, mutual funds, insurance, annuities, or long-term care, Your Money Talks covers it all, including business and personal financial decisions. And now, your host, Jerry Sluiswitz.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Your Money Talks. I am Jerry Sluiswitz, your host for the next half hour. We'll talk about money in the markets, stocks, bonds, update you on what is going on for all your personal financial needs. It is Wednesday, the 6th of August, 2014. This is a live program. Hey, stocks are up this morning. We didn't start that way, though, unfortunately. This would have been the ninth down session out of the last 11, but the Dow's up 18. Again, it's a limp rally. S&P's up 2. And the Nasdaq's up 7.5, but better than being down, I guess. There's some angst out there. There's no doubt about it. There's some concerns, and I'm going to tell you this. I've been saying this now for the past week. This is the wake up call. Okay, I'm not saying it's a sell strategy. I'm not saying you got to sell here, but it is the wake up call. Reports are that Russia is building up troops on its border with eastern Ukraine. This came out yesterday. The Polish prime minister or somebody like that said there's 20,000 troops on the border of Ukraine. Gold is rallying this morning, back above $1,300 an ounce. Big gap up this morning in gold. Oil's up a little. You'd see gold and oil. Those are kind of your tells. But gold's up $24 an ounce, $1,309. Silver's up 21 cents. So, but yeah, it is up oil as well. You can see it across the board. Natural gas is higher as well. Those are, those are concerns. That's like, oh, is it true? Could this be a problem? Gold would be a good hedge, if there really comes into a full-on war. Because this is, everyone's backing themselves in the corner, U.S. And Western Europe. Italy, they announced they had a 0.2% decline in second quarter GDP. Back into a recession. Technical term for recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. That's what we were watching our GDP numbers last week so closely, even though they came in at a plus 4%, which was very good. U.S., very good. Italy, not so good. See, there's concerns. See, this is a triple dip recession. It's the third time that they're falling back into a recession since 2007. There was a recession, long one, just like us. They kind of recovered. They went back into it. They were in it for another year and a half, like most of Europe was. Then they recovered only for a short period of time. It's been less than a year, about a year, and now they're back into a recession again. Now, Italy is not all of Europe, but it's part of Europe. Germany reported a 3.2% decline in factory orders in June. Well, Germany's kind of the bright spot of Europe. Germany is the engine that drives that European train. 3.2% decline in factory orders. They obviously have a lot of concerns about what's going on in the Ukraine because the pipelines for their oil and natural gas come from Russia through Ukraine. So any kind of sanctions, any kind of threats that they make against Russia and any military action against Ukraine, Germany's, kind of like, cutting off their nose to spite their face, in other words. So that could have a problem. That's why we would see, really see oil and gas, spiking really higher. It's not that bad. It is up, there's no doubt, but not as bad as one might think. But, their factory orders declining, hey, that's a real deal. That's not, maybe. That's real. There's been a couple of these big mergers. I've been talking about how the merger and acquisition has been good for the U.S. market in the fact that if corporate insiders, the leaders of a company, look at their competitors and say, geez, I think the competitor is cheap. We should buy them versus doing it ourselves. That is cheaper to buy them, make versus buy. I had this when I was getting my engineering degree way back when. So they see value. Hey, if companies see value in other companies, then we as investors that don't have that insight should say, well, I guess things are okay to be an investor. I've been saying that all year. Well, guess what? Some, and again, this is only a few, but undoing of some of the mergers. 20th Century Fox, FOXA, is dropping its bid for Time Warner, TWX. That was, you know, that was kind of an interesting deal because Fox owns Fox News, which is heavily right-wing, and then Time Warner owns CNN, which is heavily left-wing. But Time Warner, TWX, down 11.3% on that news. That's why buying these mergers after the announcement for that little spread, not always a good idea. Fox News on the other, not Fox News, it's 20th Century Fox. They 21st Century Fox. They do a lot of movies, etc., as well as, you know, cable networking programs. They're up 5% on the news. This merger is falling through. Sprint and T-Mobile, they're finally giving up the ghost. Sprint is dropping its bid for T-Mobile. There was too many regulatory hurdles. We thought that that was going to be the case all along. Sprint, symbol S, down 17.6%. on the news, because that was going to make it one, I think, the third largest cell phone company in the world. T-Mobile is TMUS. They're also down on the news, down 7.5%. Again, regulatory hurdles. In other developments, Walgreens, WAG. You know, Walgreens, big, huge drugstore. I go there a lot, actually, close to my home. They're down, what is it now? It's down 12%. Said the company's going to purchase the remaining portion of a UK company, United Kingdom, that is, Alliance Boots, that it doesn't already own. But it said it's going to remain domiciled in the U.S. That's good for U.S. taxpayers. I mean, that's that inversion route that people are talking about, that these companies are taking. They're buying companies overseas, and then they're moving their headquarters overseas to avoid U.S. taxes. So that's going to win praise in congressional circles. But by judging by its stock, you know, the shareholders would prefer higher profits versus a higher degree of tax patriotism. But it's interesting because Walgreens also getting hammered. They announced a $3 billion stock repurchase program, which generally helps, you know, companies because they're buying their own stock. Another reason why stock market been doing good. And they also raised their quarterly dividend by 7.1%, which is also good news. But for some reason, this this merger deal is really hammering the stock. Walgreens down to 61.05, you know, big on the day, down 12%. So very, very interesting news. There is some good news out there. Disney, DIS, Disneyland, happiest place on earth. They're up this morning. They reported some impressive results for the June quarter. Disney, like I said, its symbol is DIS. That stock right now, gosh, you got to be kidding me. It's flat on the day. It was up a little earlier this morning on some good news. The U.S. trade deficit narrowed to $41 billion from $45 billion, and that is good news as well, result of exports increasing three-tenths of $1 billion. I guess that would be $300 million, and imports decreasing $2.9 billion for May imports. That will probably lead to an upward revision for the next export component for the second quarter GDP. So that 4% GDP number could come in a little bit better. When I look at the market, I see high-yield bonds still holding now after a big sell-off. I look at HYG or JNK. They're holding in here. They're not selling off like the market was earlier this morning. They've been kind of the leader in this sell-off. We are oversold. You would think that we would be getting a bounce sometime in the near future. It's watching the bounce that really is going to matter. You want to watch the bounce. It's something that stocks don't go straight down. They don't go straight up. So we are having a sell-off. Now, what's happened over the last couple of years is this buy-the-dip mentality. They just buy the dip because the Fed's got their back. So they're going to print more money, and you just buy the dip, and don't worry, there's going to be more money coming into the system, and the market goes higher. We know that the Fed is going to be ending their quantitative easing, supposedly, that's what they say, in October, the end of October. So what will happen then? So you want to watch this bounce. Does it go all the way back up and take out the old highs? Then the dip is over. The buy the dip was the right thing. If it doesn't quite make it back and then we go back down and go lower, that could be a change in the momentum for the markets. Just because we're selling off doesn't mean the market momentum from this bull market has changed, but there's a lot of factors out there. It's important to get a free, no obligation portfolio review. It's important to know that you have a safety net on all your positions in your portfolio. Call my office toll free, 1-800-449-9501. I'm Jerry Slusewicz, Pacific Financial Planners, 1-800-449-9501. Host of this program, Your Money Talks. You can go to our website, which is yourmoneytalks.com. Sign up for a free email newsletter. As you know, I always bring in guests that I think are very smart when it comes to investing and also when it comes to protecting. Today we have a return guest. He's been on the show frequently, actually, Jim Mascara. One of the things I like about him, he's got a degree in industrial engineering, which is where my degree is as well. He really got into consumer simulation of real world systems, and he's kind of come up with a plan, if you will, that he put out in a book called Escaping Oz, Protecting Your Wealth During the Financial Crisis. That book's available on many of your favorite bookstores, including Amazon.com. Jim, welcome back to Your Money Talks.
Hey, good morning, Jerry. How's the weather in Southern California these days?
You know, it's pretty weird. We had some rain twice in the last couple of weeks. We don't get rain during the summer here, but, it's all good. Normal California, sunny, and good to go. What's your take on this? I mean, we've been selling off. We're up again this morning a little bit, but we've been selling off, a high percentage of days over the last couple of 2 weeks of trading. Is this something to be concerned about, even though we're at our new all-time high a couple of weeks ago?
Well, let's look back just a little bit. You know, the market overall, I would say, has been very, very complacent. I mean, historically complacent. I mean, we've had a very low VIX, a historically low VIX, something known as the St. Louis Federal Reserve Financial Stress Index, of which VIX is a component of that, has also been historically low. Investors Intelligence Survey, that's been showing extreme bullish sentiment on the part of investment advisors. Yield is incredibly low as well. So when you look at all that, I mean, it really sets up a market that's been very, very complacent. So one of the things I have noticed, though, recently is that risk aversion is increasing. You had mentioned earlier in your discussion about HYG. There's a ratio that I look at that's the HYG over TLT, which is the junk bond over the treasury bond ratio. And recently, that has kind of started to tick up a little bit. So if you look at a higher ratio, that means that investors will tend to be a little bit more risky. Lower ratio means that that they're going to be a little bit more risk-averse. The Dow, looking at the Dow Industrials, it made a high on the 16th of July on an intraday basis and a close basis. I got a short-term sell signal using a system that's proprietary developed on the 31st of July. Another thing I look at is the Dow Utilities. It made its high on the 30th of June, and I got a short-term sell signal on July 2nd. So what those short-term sell signals mean to me is it doesn't mean that the market has turned abruptly yet. I have two other time horizons that I look at. I have an intermediate one and then a longer-term one. Until the intermediate one changes, which it's close right now, I personally wouldn't get too excited about the start of the next bear market. But there's enough things in place right now that definitely make me concerned.
Well, Jim, you mentioned the utilities sector. The utilities have been leading this market this year, through the first half of the year, as you mentioned. And, I mean, it was the leading sector. And one of the concepts, I guess, or thoughts out there is that utilities are heavily leveraged and interest rates actually went down, from over 3% at the start of the year to, where we are now. We're below 2.5% this morning. And so it was one of the best sectors. Well, when it peaked out, I'm looking at, for example, the iShares U.S. Utilities Index, the ETF, IDU, it was 111.89. It's broken below its 200-day moving average. It's at 101.01. It's down 10%, basically, from that high. That's fairly significant when your leaders are rolling over. You look at the small cap index as well. That was down 6% in the month of July. Are you seeing this as a warning sign, and what should people be doing right now to protect themselves?
Well, I got two very important, again, for me personally in my proprietary system, two short-term sell signals, both in the industrials and the utilities. I know the composites made a little bit of a later high compared to the industrials, I believe. I personally, and again, I know a lot of investors, people that are listening on the show, have been in the market for a long time. Maybe some never actually exited, you know, in 2007, 2008. Until the intermediate term signal for me changes to bear, which it has not yet. Again, it's close, but it hasn't yet. And again, based on the longevity of this market and in the history of the latest recovery from 2009, the intermediate term signal has only changed, I believe, in my system once or twice. Once was in 2011 when we had that pretty big sell-off. And another one may have been at the beginning of this year. So those things have happened, again, in this bull run, but they haven't been confirmed by what I would call the long-term indicator. But if the intermediate-term indicator hits for me, I'm going to pay a lot more attention to this, as this could be basically the end of this bull market that has been in occurrence within what I would consider a broader secular bear market since 2009.
Wow. So you still think we're in a broader secular bear market then, and this has just been a nice bull run.
If you follow things like Elliott waves and some other techniques, you might draw that conclusion. I mean, for the average investor, it looks like a bull market, and that's fine for their perspective.
Yeah, but I'm in agreement with you. I was in agreement with your first comment, is that, you know, this is still, it's just overshot. And one of the reasons that it's overshot is this quantitative easing. Now, we've talked a lot about it on this program, but, you know, can you kind of, you know, they're going to take that punch bowl away, you know, this fall. Can you explain briefly, you know, your take on quantitative easing, what they did, why they implemented it, and then what would might be happen if they take this away, which sounds like they will.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I was thinking about this before the interview today, that probably something that's been forgotten, I guess, in the course of the last few years, is we keep hearing the term QE, quantitative easing, which is an effort by the Federal Reserve to make these security purchases in order to bolster the balance sheets of banks, and thus have the banks have the ability to make more loans, i.e. expand the economy. But, you know, one thing that people should remember is that the Fed has always conducted something called open market operations, which primarily was for the purchase of U.S. Treasuries. Now, the stated purpose of that action was to what? To control the money supply, so i.e. maybe look at what inflation's doing, buy and sell securities accordingly. This was a different sort of animal. Here the Fed said, you know what, we experienced a major economic slowdown in 2008, 2009. We need to do something because the public and Congress expects us to. So we're going to call this thing called QE, which is, again, nothing different than what they were doing before, only on a much more massive scale. Oh, and then on top of that, we're going to add in that we're going to purchase mortgage-backed securities. So when you look at what QE is, think about something they've already been doing, but enhance it manyfold and then add mortgage-backed securities to it. Oh, and then make all of this, all of these purchases, increase the Fed balance sheet by about $4 trillion in the last 5 years. So in theory, that's $4 trillion that is in the banking system at a minimum that should be there available to expand into the economy, which, as many people know in some articles I've written, has not.
You mentioned mortgage-backed securities, MBS purchases, as something the Fed did. Can you give us the scope of these purchases and then what effect did that have on the housing market?
Yeah, so the Fed ponied up for about $1.7 trillion, that's with a T, of those MBS purchases, and that's starting in, you know, the 2009 period. And I do want to mention, prior to 2009, they own no mortgage-backed securities. So, again, this has been a tremendous, massive acquisition of mortgage-backed securities on the Fed balance sheet over the course of the last 5 years. One thing I do want to mention, though, is that And I wrote this in my book, Escaping Oz, is that really the economy after 2008 entered a new deflationary or deleveraging phase that has very, very real psychological components. And I know people would probably question, well, deflation, that means lower prices. It does for some things. Prices can rise during the deflationary phase. And perhaps, you know, we can do another show on that. But if you look at mortgage debt outstanding in the United States, since the financial crisis, so use 2008 or even 2009, mortgage debt has collapsed by about $1.5 trillion. So think about that for a second. You have the Fed on the one hand buying $1.7 trillion of mortgage-backed securities, but then you have overall mortgage debt outstanding, you know, collapsing by $1.5 trillion. So that's just part of, you know, the whole deflationary process that's taking place, is that people are less willing to have debt. And, you know, one of the things that's occurring right now in the housing market is you have, you know, some number of housing owners that cannot move, maybe wish to sell but can't because they're underwater. And then you have an entry of people with cash. Some are owner-occupiers, but others are just simply investors. So there's a lot of cash that's being thrown into the housing market. Well, the fragility of having a bunch of owner investors in the housing market is that, well, you know, if I'm in a house and I'm underwater, let's say I can still make my payments, I'm less likely to, you know, to cut bait and run. But if I'm an owner investor, well, that house is not the roof over my head, so I can much more easily depart if my investment starts to go against me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. The psychology there is that there's no personal attachment to the home because it's not the one over your head. So,
that's right.
Okay, so this quantitative easing set to end, Jim, and if it does, it they've been buying mortgage-backed securities, they've been buying U.S. Treasuries, and the mortgage-backed securities have kind of been helping keep interest rates low for the housing market, and it's keeping the borrowing money or money available for the debt that we incur, you know, running the U.S. government. What do you think is going to happen to the treasury market or the mortgage-backed security market after quantitative easing ends?
Well, you know, the treasury market's interesting because the U.S. treasuries are still considered you know, almost like a near cash instruments, particularly if you're talking about treasury bills. And even on the longer term treasuries, you know, we've had a significant influx of foreign ownership of our treasuries, even since the recession of 2008-2009. Foreigners right now own about $6 trillion of our federal debt. So that's a pretty large amount. And even if you look at debt that's held by the Federal Reserve, the general public, I mean, those things have actually gone up since the economic crisis. So, you know, one of the things that you start to think about is, okay, well, you have the Fed maybe still withdrawing some of their purchases of treasuries. But again, keep in mind, they can still do that and probably will do that with their, you know, federal open market operations where, you know, they buy and sell treasuries anyway, which they had done historically. So, I would say if you look at bonds in general, the higher risk bonds, so the junk bonds, that HYG fund that you'd mentioned earlier, those would be more at risk because as the stock market starts to go down, not so much but certainly at the point that it starts to occur, and you're starting to see some fracture right now, people are going to want to move towards some sort of quality and safety. And, you know, the problem right now, of course, is the Fed actions have created such a low interest rate in the treasuries that they've absolutely punished savers. But at some point, whether you're a domestic investor or even a foreign investor, you're going to want to scurry towards quality. And the flight to quality typically does occur during the stock market slowdown. But I will ask your listeners to ponder this thought, though. You know, in my book, I said, okay, what would be a comparable FICO score for the U.S. government if you just had to, if you had to evaluate them as a borrower, how would it be? And I came out that they would be a fair borrower. But look what's happened since then. You know, we've expanded our federal debt, and our contingent liabilities have gotten a lot larger. So is it fair to say that the U.S. is a better credit risk now than it was in 2007 when 10-year Treasury rates were double what they are now? You know, I think that question is going to be answered at some point in the future.
Yeah, and again, your point is that because they've basically gone huge more debt, that they're probably not a better credit score is your assessment, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Jim, there's so much I could talk to you about. There really is. You know, you've got this book, Escaping Oz, Protecting Your Wealth During the Financial Crisis. You've got other ways people could follow you. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, people who are listening right now if they want to track you?
Yeah, escapingoz.com is the book website that talks about, you know, some things that I wrote about. I published the book about 3 years ago. Conceptually, I don't know that I would change too much. You know, certainly there'd be some updates, but conceptually I wouldn't change too much of what I wrote. I also have thesentinel.biz, which is a financial and economic site. And then my main business also is a business restructuring consultancy and capital acquisition firm for small businesses, and that's called Sentinel Consulting, and that's sentinelconsulting.biz.
Yeah, but the sentinel.biz and Escaping Oz, was that .com on that?
Yeah, escapingoz.com and then thesentinel.biz.
And you do updates on those websites, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Jim Esquira, again, so just briefly, 1 minute if you could, because we are almost out of time. What do you think this ending of QE is going to do to other areas of the economy?
Well, you know, the goal was obviously to help the economy, but, you know, another thing that you can look at is the velocity of money, whether that's M1 money, which is, you know, the cash and cash equivalents, M2, you know, savings accounts, you know, CDs and things like that. So you'd expect if their actions were favorable to the economy, you would see the velocity of money increase. Well, you know, the exact opposite has happened. They've had almost no effect on the velocity of money. So transactionally, you know, money flowing through the economy has had absolutely no effect from QE. So I would assume that if you remove it, it's not going to do anything to that. So, again, that just reflects that deflationary deleveraging, the slowing of the economic engine that's there, that's kind of lying beneath the surface that people don't see.
Yeah. Yeah, again, so that's one of the reasons there's not a whole lot of inflation. The velocity of money isn't really there. You see a deflationary, not an inflationary trend that we're still in, right?
That's correct. And again, it's important to understand the things that are going to deleverage right now are those things where credit was most prevalent in before. So that's why when people say, well, you know, some prices are still going up, yes, they are, but credit didn't funnel into those, what I'll call those cones of investment. Those funnels are where you're going to see the greatest amount of deleveraging.
Yeah. Jim Esquira, Escaping Oz, Protecting Your Wealth During the Financial Crisis. That's his book. You can go to escapingoz.com for an update on that, or thesentinel.biz is his website as well. Jim, hey, always a pleasure to have you on. Love to get you back. If you see that that trigger, that intermediate sell trigger, please get a hold of me, and we'll get you back on you know, very quickly.
Sounds good, Jerry. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks again. Jim Esquira, he's got some great points, okay, and he's still saying very similar. I mean, we got similar backgrounds. And again, I don't talk to him between the shows or anything like that, and you know that we're in cahoots together. But he's saying, hey, near term, you know, he's got a near term sell, but it's not like, hey, look, that the bull market's over. He's still waiting for this. He's waiting to see what happens. And that's kind of what I'm saying. Hey, geez, we're just 2 weeks removed from an all-time high. You know, the buy the dip has been working, I mean, for a long time. But the bull market's long in the tooth. The normal bull markets run about 53, 55 months. We're 65, 66 months into this bull market that started back in March 2009. Do the math, you know, somewhere around there. Depends on when you start counting. It was early in the month, so that's where you get the 66th month. It was March 9th, I guess, was the turnaround. So of 2009, and here we are, August 5th or whatever, 6th, I guess. I'm sorry. I got to wake up. It's Wednesday the 6th. Anyways, so you just got to be careful. That's the point. You've got to have a plan for participation and protection. Saying, I'm going to hold and hope, that's not a plan. It really isn't. And the thing to me that really gets me is that you work so hard for your money, or however you got your money. If you got it through inheritance, you got it through a lawsuit, you got it through a business, you got it through something. Hey, you've got this chunk of money. You've got an opportunity to protect your money. See, the strength isn't in finding somebody who could predict the future. That's not the strength. You're not going to find that person. Hey, there was a Bloomberg News reporter that Warren Buffett, their company Berkshire Hathaway, was more than $50 billion in cash at the end of June. $50 billion. First time it finished a quarter above that level since he became chairman more than four decades ago. But Buffett's a pretty smart guy. He's got a lot of cash. I'm not saying raise cash. I'm saying come up with a plan for participation and protection. I can help. Jerry Slusewitz, Pacific Financial Planners, host of this program, Your Money Talks. Online, sign up for our email newsletter, yourmoneytalks.com. 1-800-449-449. 1-800-449-9501. 1-800-449-9501. Jerry Sluicewitz, call for your free, no obligation portfolio review. I will sit down with you and show you where to put the stops on each and every position in your portfolio, where to have an exit strategy to protect yourself if this thing doesn't work. Tune in tomorrow for more Your Money Talk, same time, same place. Have a great day, everybody.
Accuracy and completeness are not guaranteed. The opinions expressed in this report are those of Jerry Sluicewitz, are not necessarily those of TD Ameritrade or Western International Securities or its affiliates or those of this radio station. Any investment discussed may not be suitable for all investors. Investors must make their own decisions based on their own specific investment objective and financial circumstances. Always discuss your situation with a financial advisor before committing to any investment decision.